Welcome to War Gaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. War Gaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is Recast 115, 1775, the board game. You're like, wait, what the heck did he just say? So, recently, and not so recently, I've done what I have called recast episodes. They are previously released content that you may or may not have heard, and then I spruce them up and I make them sound better. But what this one is, it's something special. This isn't a classic episode from the vault or anything. This is a continuation, kind of the 2014 podcast season. So as the 2014 season was winding down, I said, hey guys and girls, wargamers alike, what I'm going to do, instead of just taking my standard 2-week break where you get nothing from me and you're sitting there thinking, oh, if only I had something to listen to. What I'm going to do instead is I will release 2 best of episodes. And these best of episodes would be content from the 2014 season, something that I really liked, I particularly enjoyed, and it may have been something that didn't receive as much attention as I thought it should. So by and large, it's kind of excluding anything from the top 10 episodes of 2014, trying to focus on other stuff that maybe you didn't get a chance to hear, but that I think you should. And in addition to re-airing the episode, it's not just the same old, same old. I have some new little content and information that goes at the start of it, such as this introduction. So this episode is one of 2 best episodes. It's a focus on 1775, the board game, and then the other best of episode is on the holiday gift guide. And you're thinking, wait a sec, holiday gift guide? That's done astronomically well, and I would agree with you. In fact, after my looking back on 2014 episode, I still keep track of the numbers for things. And I can tell you that the holiday gift guide episode has moved all the way up into 5th place. It has almost 1,400 unique listeners. So it's not normally something I would do, but the reason why that's going to be covered in the next Best Of episode is because it's doing so well. In previous years, they did not. But this one is all about 1775. So I have a little story about 1775. The real name of it is 1775 Rebellion. It's by Academy Games. I talked about it extensively. In fact, the whole episode of episode 115 was devoted to this board game. I talked how to play, why you might want to play, the pros, the cons, how much it would be, all that sort of stuff. And there were links in the show notes. There will be links in the show notes of this recast episode as well, so that you can purchase it on Amazon. Those links are affiliate links. What that means is it doesn't cost you any extra for using them. You pay the same low price on Amazon for buying the game. But then Amazon says, hey, Jonathan over at Wargaming Recon sent so-and-so to us to buy this game, so we want to say thank you. So they send a little financial contribution my way as thanks for sending you their way to make the purchase. Of course, if your friendly local game store has it, I highly recommend to purchase it there. I happen to buy it at a friendly local game store, which is part of my story. I briefly covered this story at the start of the original episode 115. So if you heard the original and you're listening to this, you're thinking, this is the same darn story. He's a liar. There's nothing new here. There is some new stuff, I promise. So the story is, I was at TotalCon. I love TotalCon, in case you don't know. But I was at TotalCon, and they have a really amazing vendor hall. The room, it's a small room, but the benefit of that is, instead of being swamped by hordes of vendors of varying quality, when you go to TotalCon, you know that whatever vendors are there, chances are they've been there year and year and year after year. Plus, you know that they have to be particularly choosy about what they bring, because there's only so much room. As such, they bring in the best of the best. They bring in games that they know will sell, games that are incredible that maybe you haven't heard of, but you should have. They bring in the stuff that is going to be geared towards the TotalCon audience. TotalCon is a huge board game, card game, and RPG gaming, which is redundant, I know, but RPG convention. So although 1775 is a board game, the fact that it's a historical board game kind of makes it an odd choice. I've always done well with my buddies, Adrian and Court, in running historical games as events there. There's a lot of historical gamers who go, but they don't play historical games there, by and large. They go into Total Con to play other types of games. And really, they could pick up a historical game, whether it's 1775 or a minis game or whatever, at any other historical gaming con out there. So why buy such a thing at Total Con? It's a big question. I happen to be at the Crossroad Games vendor booth, and the guys there, they are fantastic. Brendan and Jeremy are just two of the most likable, intelligent, and informative game store people I've ever met in my life. They run Crossroad Games. It's up in New Hampshire, which is wrong. I should know better than that. Up in Maine, just outside of Portland, Maine, in fact. And of course they want to sell you a game, but they're not there to sell you the game. They want you to get the right item for you and for your needs, which is how it should always be when you go out shopping. So I was perusing the vendor hall. I was waiting for Adrian and Court to show up on the Saturday. I was there, of course, on the Friday, as I like to go early, and I usually stay over at Total Con. But I didn't get a chance on the Friday to look around in the vendor room. So Saturday was my big day to look around, maybe see what I wanted to buy. And my purpose was to kill time, because, again, I was waiting for Adrian and Court to show up so we could get things together and work on getting the table set up and all that stuff for the event. On top of that, I wanted to try to see what I could get that my wife would play. I've mentioned previously on the show that she is not a war gamer, and she's not really a gamer either. She'll play apples to apples. She loves Cards Against Humanity, for example. Her real desire would be something like Mario Kart, but she enjoys party games. And yet her inclination isn't to say, hey, there's a bunch of us around, let's play a party game. Her inclination is to do something else. So it's always hard for me to find something that I can try to bring her back in and lure her away into the evil ways of being a gamer. I figured Total Con was my chance, and I would go and see what they had. So Crossroad Games is one of the first vendor booths that you come across on the left side of the Total Con vendor room. And it might vary depending on which year you were listening to this and what year you were going to Total Con. But when I was there, that's how it was. I walked in and got to say hi to the guys. They asked what I wanted, and I told them. So they recommended a couple games. And the next thing you know, Court happens to show up, and he's looking around. He's looking at this game called 1775. And I was like, what the heck is this? So he's looking at it, and I'm looking at it. And then he's talking about this other game that Academy Games had made. And he was saying that this other game, which the title escapes me, that he has it, and it was good, but it was a little more in-depth than maybe what I would like to do. Definitely not a party game, but a little more in-depth than what I would like. And I'm thinking, oh, well, if this other game's in-depth, I don't really care what it says on the box for this. I think I'm going to pass on this because it's not going to be my thing. It's going to sit in the box. I'll never open it. If I do, it'll just gather dust in the corner. Why the heck would I want to get such a game? Well, then Jeremy meanders over and he's like, hey, so you guys are looking at this. Well, let me tell you about this. So then he tells a story about how a buddy of his is involved with it and helped to create it and everything. I'm thinking, well, that's pretty cool. And he's pushing a little bit just because I think he could tell that Court was receptive into the idea of maybe purchasing this game and that it might be something Court was looking for. And then I'm sitting there thinking, it's nice and all that your buddy is, you know, really into this game and helped out and everything. I don't know if it's for me. And so I was like, forget it. I'm not doing this nonsense. Well, then Court ends up buying the game, right? And so at a later date, he and I and Adrian end up playing it. And I love the game. And I was like, what? This really is that easy? I thought it was just all bullcrap what everyone was saying about this being such a good game and so accessible and everything. From the first moment I started playing it, I knew that it could be great for me and great for others too. So of course I had to pick it up at the FLGS, got it, and I said, well, let's just see what we can do with this. And then next thing you know, I play it with both of the guys next time I see them and play it again and again. Played a fair bit, in fact. And I just love this dang game. I really do. Whenever I have a free moment and I want to play a game, I'm not reaching for some minis. I'm not reaching for War at Sea or anything else. If I have any sort of desire to play like a real game, not just a computer game or whatever, I find that I'm not grabbing my X-Wing minis or whatever. I'm grabbing this. And of course, the hard part is that it's not a solo game. So what the heck do I do? Well, I grab it and I leaf through everything and go, oh, if only, and then I put it back. And yet, I'm thinking, I don't want it to just sit in that corner and gather dust. What the heck am I to do? Well, as part of the Extra Life 24-Hour Gameathon for 2014, I ended up playing a solo game of it, and it worked really well. At least I think it did. Now, I'm not going to talk about the solo game here because that's actually going to be a show topic for 2015. But this is the story of it and how it grabbed me. I did not expect to like this game. I did not expect to love this game. I thought it would be one of those games where I would play it once because one of my gaming buddies got it and I wanted to play it once since they had spent the money on it and they humor me a lot. So the least I could do would be to humor them, play it, get it done, and it would go in the file of, we're never playing this again together. You can play with other people. And there's been games that I've really pushed and others have, it's just not been their thing. For example, X-Wing Minis. I adore that game, right? And some of my other gaming buddies do as well. Just not the sort of thing that Court happens to like. And that's okay. There's different types of games for different people. I really did think that 1775 Rebellion would be one of those games that was not for me. Yet lo and behold, here I am talking about it yet again in under 1 year on Wargaming Recon. It had its own episode. I talked about it in the Extra Life Gameathon. Made it onto my list for the 2014 Holiday Gift Guide. We're doing a recast episode on it. And then in 2015, I'm going to do a whole show on how I played it solo and how you might be able to use that to play it solo too. This is a lot of exposure for one game. So that is my extra insight and story about 1775. This is why I hope that if you're listening to this recast, that you'll tell others who like the show that they should listen to this episode too, that it's not just the same old, I'm not just re-airing something without changing anything. There's actually extra stuff here that might entice you to play the game. I know we don't have an infinite sum of money out there. The game's not cheap. It's $70 list price. It's a little cheaper on Amazon. Your friendly local game store might have it at a discount, or you might just play it with a buddy who has it or whatever. Of course, I would love for you to buy the game. I'd love for you to use our affiliate link or to support your local game store. But no matter what, I just want you to try the game. If you've never tried it before, play it now. Someone you know most likely has it, and if they don't, one of you should buy it somewhere so that your group of people who you game with can play it together. It should be that communal game that the clubs have, the game stores have. It is truly incredible. It's a way for board gamers who are not board gamers to get together to introduce others into historical gaming. And it's something you can play time and time again. It is more than just playing Risk. It is so much better and more intricate and yet still accessible, which I think is a winning combination. So before we get into airing what I originally said in the episode 115, I just have a couple other things that I want to mention as part of this recast. They're not really pertinent to 1775 Rebellion, but just some stuff that I want to share. So in the episode, you're going to hear all the usual stuff, all my usual segments. There'll be an introduction, of course, which is old, but still good, right? And there'll be the regular content, there'll be the mailbag, announcements, and all that kind of stuff. But right here, I want to put newer mailbag, newer announcements, and all that sort of stuff for you to get so that you can know this is the new stuff, which is more relevant and more timely, and then you have what originally aired, and the bulk of it, of that show about 1775 will be of interest to you still, and then all the other stuff most likely may not apply anymore, may have already happened. So I just want to say that. So first of all, I want to thank the very first Patreon patron of the show, listener Jamie. Thank you so much for being a patron and for signing up on Patreon. It's a free account on Patreon, and it allows you to support things that you like, things that you love. So if you love what I'm doing here at Wargaming Recon, I would really appreciate anyone who wants to be a Patreon patron. I talked about it a little bit in the previous show, but let me just kind of cover it here. So Patreon is this really cool thing. It's kind of like a never-ending Kickstarter in that it blends the crowdsource funding aspect of Kickstarter, which is cool, right? But then it also works more like a tip jar for podcasters. So you can sign up with Patreon, it's free, and then you can choose what things you want to support. So you can say, I want to support Jonathan with the Wargaming Recon podcast, and you can do it for as little as $1 per episode. So if like 10 of you do it for $1 an episode, that's $10 an episode, which is great. And it, more than anything, it just shows that you like what I'm doing and you're supportive of what I'm doing. And if you can't do that or you don't want to, I completely understand. The show will always remain free. I will never charge your content. That's just how it's going to be. I have a whole spiel on the Patreon website for why you should be a Patreon, what if you don't, and all that kind of stuff. But I will tell you, there are three main levels of financial support backing that you can do. The first is that $1 per episode, which I think is going to be the most used, and it is so appreciated. At that level, you can expect to spend about $2 a month because the show comes out generally twice a month. If there's more than two episodes, they're just kind of, you know, cool stuff to have. You can also do a $5 or more per episode level. And at that one, I will thank you by name in every single episode that comes out during the time you are a patron, as long as you stay at that $5 or more episode level. I'm happening to mention Jamie in this, not because he's in that level of support, but because he's the first Patreon patron, and I want to say thank you. And of course, I'm appreciative of everyone, but not everyone will necessarily get their name said in the show unless they're at that $5 or more per episode level. And then there's one of the $20 or more per episode level. That is a sponsored level, really for game publishers, designers, or business owners who want to sponsor the show. So one person or one entity really can sign up for that. It costs $20 or more per episode. And then I will do a 60-second spot that will be featured on all episodes of Wargaming Recon that come out for as long as the entity or person is a patron at that level. It's just a chance to promote a product or anything like that. And then I have a few goals that I'm really aiming for. So, of course, all of you know that I got a baby on the way. The baby's coming beginning of February. And one of the things I'm really hoping to do is to automate some of the editing here at Wargaming Recon. That will allow me to continue to create all these great episodes, help you to listen to them, and help me to do it in less time, which means I can get the stuff out. So once I reach $11 per podcast episode on Patreon, I will be able to afford that automated editing. I know $11 an episode doesn't necessarily sound like a lot, but that's going to save me 2 to 3 hours per month, which I can devote to other aspects of the podcast. It also just gives me time to spend with my kid. Next is new equipment. $25 per podcast episode will allow me to put more money into new equipment, which will make the show sound better, make it easier to record, and help me to do things like maybe a live episode now and again, or a call-in show, all that kind of cool stuff. And then once I get to $50 or more per podcast episode, I will remove paid ads in the show. So once that happens, we'll wait for whatever agreements have expired with existing sponsors, and then I won't get any more sponsors for the duration that that continues to be true. And if that goes away, then I'll have to seek sponsorships again. I don't like ads. You don't like them either. I'm really particular about the ads that I put in the show because I want it to be pertinent to all of you. I want it to be useful, but it has to be something I believe in too. So if we're able to get enough crowdsource funding from all of you to get that $50 per podcast episode, I can just remove ads and keep the show ad-free. Be powered by all of you, in fact. So that is the deal with Patreon and just some of the reasons why I'm doing it. It is a soft launch, but I'm going to do like a Patreon episode kind of in 2015, and I'll spend more time in 2015 talking about it. And then let's move on to the mailbag, because I want to get into the episode for you. So on Facebook, listener Jamie, who is our very first Patreon patron, said, quote, "I'm actually listening to the Henry Hyde episode right now. Great stuff. I'm new to Wargaming Recon, but have caught all the top five so far. I'll listen to the other half now in the lead up to your 2015 season." So Jamie, thank you so much again for being a Patreon supporter and also for commenting on Facebook. Jamie is talking about our Looking Back on 2014 episode where I revealed the top 10 most popular episodes of 2014. If you're interested in what Jamie's doing, he's a wargamer and he has a little one of his own that he's trying to get into gaming and all that kind of stuff. He's on Twitter. You can follow him at Drake Pole Dragon. That's D-R-A-K-E. P-O-L-D-R-A-G-O-N. Don't worry. Link in the show notes. And then, of course, if you're listening to this on December 22nd, it's my birthday! I am turning 33, so I'm sure all of you will be sending positive birthday thoughts my way, or at least I hope you will. it's going to be a big year for me between all sorts of cool things such as being 33 and then welcoming my firstborn and just getting all that stuff done. So it'll be a lot of fun to do stuff in my 33rd year or 33rd celebration of my birth. So thank you all for that. And really, this episode's kind of like my gift to all of you, as just saying thanks for continuing to listen to the show. For those of you who are Patreon supporters, I will say this episode and the next Best Of episode will be free episodes. So you won't be charged any money for them. So I'm going to put them on Patreon and they'll count as free extra content. So you won't have to, it won't cost you any money as a supporter on that. But then the brand new stuff coming in 2015 will be regular releases for all of that. And if you're not a Patreon supporter, I hope you'll consider it. And of course, no matter whether you are or not, all of the episodes can be obtained for free from a variety of ways. There's our website at wargamingrecon.com. I do links to it on our social media, such as Facebook, Twitter, also the Facebook wargaming groups. Retweet the stuff on there. The stuff on Instagram, on Pinterest. You can find us on iTunes, of course, and on Stitcher Radio, in a variety of podcast apps. We're just about everywhere that you can imagine that you can find podcasts. So try to make it nice and easy for all of you. In 2015, I'm working to schedule some guests. I already have a show topic lined up with repeat guest Aaron Boston. We're going to talk about what you can do when your friendly local game store shuts down and how to deal with that and how to move on. So that'll be exciting. And also near the beginning of 2015, I am excited to say that John and Diane Sutherland have agreed to come on. We're just getting the scheduling set with that and with that episode with Aaron Boston, and I'll do all sorts of cool stuff. And the baby will be here beginning of February. So I'm going to release some classic episodes when the baby comes. As you can guess, I probably won't be podcasting very much right in the beginning of when the baby comes, or at least I won't be able to record new episodes then, so I hope you'll bear with me. But I will get back in the swing of things as soon as humanly possible, and I have a lot of content being stored up so that I can release it during that time frame. So don't forget that the next and final Best Of episode releases on January 5, 2015, and then the 2015 podcast season begins January 19th. 2015. So now that I've talked your ear off for about 23 minutes, 25 minutes or so, I'm going to cue up the original 1775, the board game episode for your listening pleasure. Don't forget, any of the links mentioned in there may not still work. Be sure to check out the show notes for this recast episode so that you can get all the up-to-date and current content. So how do you do that? Well, of course, it's on our website, wargamingrecon.com, or you can go to wargamingforums.com/recast115. That's wargamingforums.com/recast115, which is the same as wargamingforums.com/recast115. That'll bring you to the show notes for this recast episode with all sorts of cool stuff in it, links and all that jazz. So until next time, I hope all of you have a very merry Christmas, and for those of you across the pond, have a happy Christmas, and we'll be back next time with another episode of Wargaming Recon. And don't forget, no matter what happens in your life, no matter how much merry you must make, and no matter how many Saint Nicks are coming down your chimney, I hope that you will always know that you need to keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.
Welcome to Wargaming Recon. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 115, 1775, The Game. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. I want to welcome all of you to this episode of Wargaming Recon. If you're a longtime listener, you know the deal, but for all of you new people, Wargaming Recon is a twice-a-month podcast that talks about historical and New England gaming. This time around, we're going to be talking about a board game, so I'm going to run all of you through how you play it. I've played it a few times. I'll give my thoughts. Then we'll move on to the mailbag section of the show, which this time is pretty long. Also have an announcement later on and some other tidbits to share. If you are interested in anything that I talk about on this episode, if you want to buy a copy of the game, perhaps, or you want to find out more about it, or just find out other stuff, or maybe leave some feedback, because feedback is awesome. It allows you to share your thoughts with me about this episode or anything I've done in the past, and I tend to share feedback on the air. So I pick randomly and I share some of that kind of stuff. So if you send me feedback, you are likely to get your feedback on the air, where I'll name you by name. First names only, though, so don't worry. So you can do all of that by finding and going to the show notes, and I make it easy for you. Show notes for this episode can be found at wargamingforums.com/WR115. That's right, wargamingforums.com/WR115. So without further ado, let's talk about 1775, The Game. It's actually called 1775 Rebellion. It's by Academy Games. It's a beautiful board game. Big map, full color, high production values. And I was really interested in it because when I went to TotalCon this year, 2014, I went and I hung out in the vendor room a little bit and meandered over to one of my favorite vendors, the guys over at Crossroad Games. They're up in Maine. If you're ever in the Portland area, you have to check them out. They are just fantastic guys. Brendan and Jeremy, wonderful, know lots of stuff about a lot of games. Very friendly, no pressure. You go, you look and see what you want. They're happy to help you. And if you don't want anything, that's cool too. So Jeremy, knowing that I am a historical gamer, he's like, John, you should take a peek at this game called 1775. And turns out a buddy of his was involved with developing it. 1775 pits you, the gamer, in the role of a commander during the American Revolution, or War of American Independence, depending on where in the world you live. In the game, there are four main areas or groupings of people that you can command. You can either be a commander of the Continental Army, you can be a commander of the American Militia, you can be a commander of the British Army, or of the British Loyalists. Now, there are other factions that kind of come into play, depending on how the game goes. For example, there are Native Americans on the board. They're there by default, but they're neutral until one of the other factions, one of the other four main factions, player-controlled factions, come in and take control of them. So you have to have one of your armies or units with them. And as soon as your last unit dies or moves away, those Native Americans become neutral. And let's say there's a combat, and let's say you are the British Army, and you go and you have some Native Americans and you invade a province that has colonial militia, American militia in there, and all of your guys die for some reason, except those Native Americans. The American militia then says, hey guys, we're over here, we're friendly, you should like us, even though you just shot at us, but you should like us, and then those Native Americans become part of the American militia force, which is really interesting. And then on top of this, there's two other factions that only come into play as a result of cards or special happenings in the game. One is the French. Anyone who knows anything about the American Revolution, American War of Independence, knows that the French played a pivotal role in it for the Americans. So they come in, and of course they are on the side of the Americans, both the Continental Army and the American Militia. And then you have the Hessians, who people probably famously know as a result of that famous painting of George Washington crossing the Delaware to go into Jersey and slaughter a bunch of Hessians and send the British Army packing. Hessians, kind of a misnomer. A whole episode of this was done on a great podcast that I highly recommend called Stuff You Missed in History Class. But basically, Hessians is a broad term used to describe Germanic mercenaries, but even that's not really accurate. not going to get into it. But anyway, this faction comes into play, and of course, they are troops that can be used for the British side, whether you're Loyalists or British Army. Doesn't really matter. The game is kind of like Risk, but more in-depth. You have this map. You seed the map with units in different provinces. You use wooden pieces, predominantly colored cubes. Anyone who's played Pandemic will be familiar with what I mean. They're about the same size. So in some provinces, there are British Army, and in others, there's Loyalists, and some there's Continental Infantry, and so forth. Each turn happens randomly. What I mean by this is that the turn takes off, but you don't know who's going to go first out of the four potential factions. This game can be played with as few as two people, or as many as four. I have played this twice. In the first game, I played with two other people. Actually, both games I played with two other people. So it was 2-on-1 each time. The one player controlled both factions of that size. So for example, let's say you are the one player. You're playing against two other guys. The two other people, they're doing the Americans. So one of them is the Continental Infantry and one is the American Militia, and you as a British control both the Loyalists and the British Army. But you don't know when your turn's going to be, right? Because that is something that's determined by chance. Each faction has a turn marker that goes into this little fabric bag, and someone pulls them out, or you can have one person who does it, or everyone can just kind of pull one. And whatever turn marker comes out, that is the person's turn. So for example, maybe British Army goes first, then Continental Infantry, maybe American Militia goes next, and then the Loyalists. You never know. And in my experience, very few turns resulted in the same order for what's happening. In any given turn, you can do a few things, and you actually must do certain things. You have in your hand a hand of cards. You draw these, you have a certain number. When you go down below, you draw more, you have a discard deck, and you have your hand, which you can play cards from. You need to have movement cards in your hand. If you don't have any, you have to discard and draw up. You also have event cards that you can use. Every turn, you must move armies. Every card's different, so they have information on the card. It might say you can move up to two armies, four territories, four provinces. We can move one army, two territories. An army is composed of units. In the first time that I play this, it was very confusing what was and was not an army. The rules said things like armies and units, and we didn't really read the rules thoroughly, which was a problem. So we know that we played it incorrectly the first time. So we thought each individual cube represented an army, and that army and unit were synonymous. That's not true. You can take as many cubes, which are units, to form an army. You can take them from any faction on your side. But if you are, say, the British Army, and you are going to move an army of units, they have to at least contain one cube, one unit worth of your redcoats. So, for example, you can't say, well, I'm the British Army, and I'm going to move all Loyalists just because I want them to die, and I want to keep my British Army troops in back because they are better than the Loyalists, which they are. You can't do that. You'd have to have at least one Loyalist. And that's the same for every faction. I'm sorry. Not one Loyalist. One British Infantry Army. One British Army unit. You'd have to have at least one of them with the Loyalist. Or with Native Americans, depending on what you have. Or Hessians. So every turn, you have to move. You play your movement card, and you move. And then you can also play up to, but no more than, two event cards. They can do all sorts of cool different things. One of them allows you to place extra units somewhere. There's one that allows the American side to place French units down in, I believe, Savannah. You can place up to four. There's another one that allows Americans place up to six French into Newport, I believe. The British side has one that allows you to place Hessians into New York City, I believe, and things of that sort. So before you even start with your movement, which is important, but I'm going to back up a little bit. Before you even start, you get to deploy an additional four cubes, four units, as reinforcements. When you deploy units as reinforcements, there is, of course, a rule that covers this. And the first time played, we did it wrong. We thought it was you could put it anywhere that you had units in a province. So we were putting them all over the place, and that's not true. What the rule actually says is that you can place reinforcements into a province or territory that you control. But there are two requirements. One, you have to control the entire colony. Anyone who knows anything about American Revolution knows there were 13 colonies. Massachusetts, New York, Virginia, Georgia, and so forth. 13 colonies going up and down the eastern seaboard of the continental United States. In the map, these colonies mostly are broken up so that they are more than one territory, a little province or space. There are some exceptions, like Rhode Island is its own, but Massachusetts has three, for example. Virginia has many. It's just kind of all over the place. New York, many. Maine, many. Vermont, quite a few, and so forth. You get the picture. So you have to control the entire colony. And you control a colony by being the only side, and side here represents either British or Americans, regardless of faction, but the only side that has units in that colony. You cannot control Massachusetts if you have two territories that have your units in it, but then the other side has units in that third little territory, that third little space over there. So that's one requirement. And then the second requirement is the reinforcements have to be placed in a city. Colonies have these spaces. I call them territories, not to be confused with geographic territories or political territories, but territories, because the map is divided up into colonies, and those are divided up into sub-regions, which I'm calling territories. So the territory has to have a city in it. Using our example of Massachusetts, if you own Massachusetts, if you control it, and you want to place reinforcements in it, they have to be placed in the easternmost territory, which contains the city of Boston. You can't place them in the middle. You can't place them in the west. Same thing with, say, Virginia. You have to place them in the area that has a city. You can't place them all the way somewhere else. It has to be where the city is. And if you think about it, it makes sense because you're not going to have a whole bunch of troops just randomly showing up in the wilderness somewhere and being like, hey, we came from HQ as reinforcements. Not going to happen. Or if you're the British, for example, those reinforcements had to come all the way from England, from the UK, come all the way across the pond, across the Atlantic Ocean, and go and land. And they're not just going to randomly show up somewhere deep in Canada or something. They're going to show up on the seaboard in a port town. So they're going to show up in one of those cities. It just makes sense. So if you follow those two things, you go, you put your reinforcements in there every turn. You get to put four units as reinforcements. And it's possible that as a result of previous turns, you might have units in the reinforcement area. Maybe they had fled a previous engagement. So these fled units also get placed. I refer them all as reinforcements, but they are distinctly separate in the rules. So those all get placed. They do not all need to be placed in the same area unless you happen to only control one colony in that one city. But if you control multiple colonies, you can spread them out. You can put one here, one there, a couple over here, whatever. That's perfectly fine. After you do that, then you do your movement by playing a movement card and moving the armies, which are composed of multiple units or as many as you want or as few per those rules, and then you can move. And you could just say move them within territories you own, territories you control. Maybe you're just redistributing your forces to prepare for something. Or you can move into an enemy-controlled territory to attack, which is half the fun. And when you do, you roll dice. All the dice have different colors. The British Army dice look different than the ones for the Loyalists, for example. The reason for this is there are different probabilities of things. The dice have symbols on them. One represents a hint, which means you killed one unit of your opponent. One has a flee symbol, which means that one of your units flees from the battle, and then they get taken off and put into that special fled unit area on the map. And then the third one is blank, which is considered a command decision. Now, the command decision is very interesting because it allows you to move one unit of that corresponding color out of the battle and into an adjacent territory that you control. If there are none that are adjacent that you control, then you can't do that. And you're thinking, well, how could this happen if I'm attacking? Well, think a second. Maybe you're defending and you're surrounded by your enemy. You can't command decision out, so then they have to stay. You may also choose to not use that command decision to move one of your units out. Maybe you want to stay in because maybe it's advantageous to you. Perfectly fine. It's not a requirement to move one out. You can choose to keep them in. Nothing wrong with that. Each of the different dice, there's certain dice for the British Army, certain dice for the French regulars, certain dice for the British Loyalists, and so forth. Each of them has different probabilities and ratios of which symbol they're going to get the most. The British regulars, which I've been calling British Army, but the British regulars and French regulars have the highest chance of getting a hit. They almost never flee, for example. And the most, they either hit or, I believe, a command decision and one or two flees, I think. Don't quote me on that. Anyway, you get the picture. So you do that, and then you draw up at the end into your hand to make sure you have the correct number of cards. And then we pull out a symbol, a turn marker from the fabric bag and see who goes next. And you keep on doing this, and you go on. Well, how does the game end? How do you win? You win by controlling more colonies than your opponent. And there's one other really important requirement. You can't just be like, I control 7 colonies and you control 2, therefore I win. Well, no, because there has to be a trigger for that, okay? So I'm going to just back up a little bit. I've been talking about turns and what happened in turns. Since there are 4 factions, that means there are 4 turns. A turn for the British regulars, which I've been calling British Army, a turn for the British Loyalists, for the Continental Army, and for the American Militia. Once all 4 turns happen, you go through a round. At the end of the 3rd round, and at the end of every round following that, you get a test to see if the game is over. Now, the game is over at the end of a round, from round 3 onward, where truce cards that belong to all factions of one or both sides have been played. So I talked about movement cards and event cards. Truce cards are a very particular and interesting type of card. They are technically a movement card, but they have this event aspect to them. They allow you to move some armies X number of distance and so forth. But what's really cool about them is when you play them, you're saying, my side is done fighting, so we're ready to come to the diplomatic table and talk a truce whenever you guys are. And so if another faction is like, I feel the same way, and then they play that, you're moving closer and closer towards peace negotiations. Now, the American side, for example, could be like, hey, the American militia is playing their truce card, and then, oh, look, the American Continental Army plays theirs. If they do that, and they can play them before turn round 3, rather, but if they do that on round 3, the game is over. It could also be that the American side plays their truce cards, and then the British side's like, we play one of ours too, or we play both of ours, and the game still ends. And then you determine who wins by who controls the most number of colonies. It is entirely possible for a game to end in a tie. You're thinking, how does it end in a tie? Well, it ends in a tie if both sides, the British side and the American side, control the same number of colonies. And in actuality, a tie is kind of a loss for both sides because the game designers have said, and I'm going to read this for you, okay? The game designers say, quote, the game is won by the side that controls the most colonies. Games can end in a tie. In case of a tie, neither side wins, and America becomes a southern province of French Canada. So I would say in that aspect, the Americans are like, whoa, we actually lose because we wanted our independence. And the British are saying, whoa, we lost because we wanted to keep these colonies. And our arch nemesis, the French, have taken control. Yes, that means the French win. I know some people are probably making jokes. Wait, don't the French flee? I'm not making fun of the French. Love the French. But that is what happens in the game. So like I said earlier in this episode, I played a couple games of this, and the first game just totally messed up stuff. For example, I mentioned how messed up you got confused about what units meant, what armies meant. We're doing armies of single cubes, single units, thinking this isn't getting anywhere. And then it ended up finding out after that game, oh wait, we can have multiple cubes. And what benefit is there to that? Because you only have a finite number of dice of each type. So there's some strategy involved there of trying to maximize which colors you use, which faction type of units you want to send in, and you want to have in for defense, what you take for casualties, if you want to take, say, a loyalist over a British regular, or maybe you want to take a continental infantry instead of an American militia. There's all this kind of strategy involved. In the second playthrough, it was really interesting because we did a lot of this correctly, and I had printed out the rules. A buddy of mine actually owns the game and sent me a copy of the rules so that I could look it over and get more. And I printed them out, and I was like writing furiously all over, making notations and underlining things and highlighting stuff. I was like, this is really important, and don't forget this. Oh, we messed up on that. Pay extra close attention to this. So I had that out in front of us while we played. It went much smoother, and it was really interesting because this time around, I happened to be playing with 2 buddies, and it was 2-1. I was on the side with 2. It was the Americans versus the British, of course, and I was the American Continental Army, and my other buddy was the American militia, and then the other guy played both factions of the British side, the British regulars and the loyalists. And the game started off looking like, well, things are going exceedingly well for the American side. And so well, I thought, oh, when's the other shoe going to drop? Because my luck is never that good. Placing units all over the place and moving stuff around. There's a lot of fighting going on up in Maine and New Hampshire. Americans try to take that, and then we would try to do well down in the South and kind of had things going on. But the British had a stranglehold on New York City and on Jersey. And so we're like, oh, what are we going to do? And trying to deal with that, knowing that there's that threat. But meanwhile, the British kept on sending tons and tons of reinforcements up into Nova Scotia and kept on thinking, oh, this is not good, not good. One of the, actually a couple of the movement cards allow you to move your armies by sea. And if you are playing that on the Eastern Seaboard, you can basically take armies from whatever section, province, territory you have on the Eastern Seaboard, and you can go somewhere else entirely. And so you kind of, you play the game like Risk in that you're getting all these armies together and you want to control areas, but you don't really want to leave any area uncontrolled. You could do that to still retain ownership or control of a colony. Let's say you are the side that has units in the colony of Georgia, but you only actually have units in, say, a couple of the sections of that. You own Georgia. You own the colony of Georgia. But if you happen to leave one of the coastal areas free, the British could be like, ha-ha, we're going down to Nova Scotia, and look at that, we landed now, we can test Georgia, so you no longer own it. Well, wouldn't you know, that kind of stuff happened. A fair bit, actually. It caused us to lose colonies that we had, and it was really close for most of the game. We ended up losing a lot of colonies. We tried some risky things, me more than others, because I knew the game was getting near the end, and I was the first person to play a truce card, mainly because it allowed me, I think, to move like four armies, one space, or something like that. And I was in a perfect spot to start moving a lot of stuff early on and take some colonies. I was like, I'm going to do it. I don't have anything else in my hand that will work. So I just want to do it and get it out there and go and take control. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh, well, this will be interesting to see who else plays a truce guard, because depending on who does and the timing of it, us Americans could win or we could lose, especially as things were slipping away and not doing so well for us. And it got to a point where it was close, but all we needed was for my compatriot to play a truce card. And what do you know? He ends up going through his entire deck, and it's the last card in his deck. So by the time he got to play it, the game was going on and on. It was near the end, and things were looking bad. We were probably going to lose if we didn't do something really unique. So just kind of went crazy and figured we're not going to take any colonies. We couldn't. We weren't in a position with anything to move units anywhere to do that. But we could take control some colonies away from the British, such as Nova Scotia, all over there, up in Quebec and stuff. There were a couple spaces that we could move stuff in, and we didn't have to keep it for long, just had to keep it for, you know, a couple turns or a round, and all we had to do was just make sure that they didn't take it back. So we did that for a bunch of colonies, and by bunch, I mean like, say, two or three, maybe four. And it was actually successful, enough so that by the time the game ended, I believe the score was something like, oh geez, it was either 3-2 or like 6-5 where us Americans won and the British didn't, but it was really, really close. I was thinking it's more like that 3-2 or like say 4-3 or something like that. And all the rest were contested. So it was a narrow, minor victory is what I would say. Because really, if you're fighting for your freedom, for your independence as Americans, and you're like, hey, we got three colonies and you British only control two, I think long term, things are not going to go so well, because maybe you're going to have this other section of people. Maybe France is going to be like, we don't want to support you anymore. We're just going to take these other ones. Or maybe the Hessians are like, forget you. We're done. We don't want your monies anymore. Or the Native Americans are like, we're just going to band together and form this coalition and get rid of you interlopers who've invaded our lands and tried saying that you own this. So I think long term, neither side was really going to do well. But for the purposes of the game, the Americans won. Yay! We got our freedom for our few colonies. So it was definitely a narrow or minor victory, but it was a lot of fun to play. Because of all of this stuff, actually, I was very, very excited. Actually, I should be completely honest. Halfway through the first game, I was like, I want this game. I need to buy it. And before we started playing, I thought, oh, you know, this is a game that we'll play maybe once, maybe twice, but not close together, and I don't think we're going to get really excited about it. We're playing it, and I was like, oh, I'm really into this game, and I didn't think I would be. I was just like, oh! And I'll go over it, and like everyone else was having a blast with this game. And keep in mind, we were playing it wrong. We were doing things incorrectly. And even though we were, and we were messing up, and we knew we were for the first game, we really had a blast. And for me, that's what gaming and wargaming is about. It's about having fun with your friends. It's important to do other things, to have like painted models and have a nice looking table and be historically accurate and all this other kind of stuff. That's important. Don't get me wrong. But for me, if you're not having fun with the people you're gaming with, why are you even bothering? This is a hobby. You're supposed to be enjoying yourself. And we were. We loved playing 1775, the board game. So after we played that first game, I couldn't stop thinking about it. I dreamed about it, which is really weird. I was like, oh, I need to play this game. I should buy this game. I don't know. Maybe I need to play it again before I buy it. So I was having like these inner monologue with myself for weeks. And then I was like, guys, anyone free? Can we play this game? And they're like, sure. So we played it again. I was like, yeah, I got to get this game. And then I talked about it on Facebook, because that's one of the cool things for those of you who don't know. We have a presence on Facebook. We also are on Twitter and some other social media websites. But on Facebook, I do a lot of the stuff where I will post, say, things that are going on as they're happening, which is great, because if you just listen to the podcast, it's wonderful, you get to hear about stuff, but usually you have to hear about it after it happens. Or maybe it's a bigger event and I'm going to talk about it beforehand. But usually, you can't hear about it really as it's happening. So I can be playing a game and take a photo and put it on Facebook, or I can tweet as I'm playing the game, hey, this is really cool, you guys should play, or whatever. So I had done that. And that actually leads us into the mailbag section, or part of it anyway, of the show. But before I do, I want to say that if you haven't played 1775 Rebellion, the board game, one, I highly recommend it. It is a blast. So much fun. It's very accessible. Make sure you read the rules first, but it's very accessible. It's a lot of fun. You don't need to be like a historian or a history major to like it. You don't even need to be a wargamer to like it. Obviously, if you enjoy any of those things, you will like it a lot more than if you weren't. But it's a lot of fun. It's a nice cooperative game, and it's a good introduction to the American War of Independence, the American Revolution. So if you want to get your own copy, of course, go to your friendly local game store. Love friendly local game stores. Go there and get it. But if you don't have one, or maybe you don't have one near you, or one that's not friendly, or if you just like to buy things online, Amazon always has it at a good price, and we have an affiliate link. So if you use our affiliate link, it is wargamingforums.com/1775game. That's wargamingforums.com/1775game. If you use that, you buy the game from Amazon, they send it to you and all that like normal. And then Amazon pays us a little bit for sending them some sales. And they're like, hey, thank you for sending us the business. We wouldn't have got the business otherwise. So they send us a little money. It costs you nothing, costs Amazon a little something, but they can afford it, right? And so they send it our way, and that allows me to do cool things like get other games to talk about and share with you, and to go to conventions, or just to afford to be able to keep podcasts and paying for things like web hosting and, you know, bandwidth and all that sort of stuff and gear and everything. So that's my spiel about that. Now we move on to Mailbag. Mailbag is a cool part of the show where you get to hear what you have said. Yes, you, the listener. You get to hear whatever your feedback happened to be. And we don't share all the feedback, but I look at all pieces of feedback and I try to respond to every piece of feedback, every email or tweet or Facebook message, try to respond to all of that. And then I pick some of that and we'll put it in an episode and share it in the mailbag section. So I have a few bits of feedback to share with all of you this time. The first couple deal with 1775. And this is why I did that little preamble about Facebook. I was able to share on Facebook that I was playing 1775. Then I shared it the second time. I was like, this is really cool. And so because of that, some people who are in the community with you, who are listeners like you, or who have been guests on the show, were like, this is cool, and let's talk about the game. So one of them is actually a former guest and a really cool guy because of two things. One, he is an organizer for HuzzahCon. Huzzah is a fantastic historical minis and tabletop gaming, board gaming, but historical wargaming convention in Portland, Maine. Dean Emerson wrote in, and he's also the owner of this cool store, the Brigadier's Bookshelf. So he wrote in on Facebook to say, quote, I had a copy for sale at Huzzah, and someone snapped it up. I tried to order a second copy, but the distributor was out. So Dean, first off, thank you very much for your comment on Facebook. I want to say how much I appreciate you taking the time to do that, and that I'm very excited someone grabbed your copy at Huzzah and that you got some money from it. So, folks, you can tell if his distributor was out, it might be hard to get, so hopefully your friendly local game store has it in stock. But if not, Amazon definitely does. Use that affiliate link. It'll be in the show notes. If you forget, don't worry. Go to the show notes and it'll be there. And then the second bit is from Aaron Bostian. Aaron is another really interesting guy. He's been on the show quite a bit as a guest, started off as a listener, and he is not an employee at his friendly local game store down in Virginia, but he's just one of those gamers who, like you, probably goes and organizes events there, and he's really helped to build a community of gamers down in his area. So he wrote on Facebook to say that he had his friendly local game store order him a copy because he was so excited by what I had to say about it. And now I have a little bit more of listener feedback from all of you. So back on episode 113, I talked about, it was actually really my response to a column by Sam Mustafa in an issue of Wargame Soldiers and Strategy magazine. And episode 113 was titled, Are Painted Minis Essential to Miniatures Wargaming? And so I kind of editorialized in there about whether or not they are and what circumstances. And I put that on Facebook and shared a link. And Wargame Soldiers and Strategy also has a Facebook presence. And so it got shared on there, and their community happened to interact with it. And I got emails and Facebook posts and all sorts of stuff. Overwhelming amount of feedback. So much of that I can't share it all here. But this episode generated probably the most amount of feedback that I can ever imagine, remember that had ever come in. Which was really the purpose of it. It's something I'm interested in and passionate about, but something I know that, even more importantly, all of you are deeply passionate about. Whether you should or should not paint models is brought up time and time again and causes lots of debate, arguments, discussion, conversation, all that kind of stuff. So overwhelmingly people like very passionate about this issue, which is great. And I'm just going to highlight a few remarks. These, like I said, have come from the Wargame Soldiers and Strategy magazine Facebook page. On there, Sean said, quote, even if you only base coat your figures, I always maintain that they look far better than bare metal or plastic. Philip commented, definitely paint them no matter how slowly. And finally, and I thought this was one of the funniest remarks from anyone who commented, and I don't think he meant it in a humorous way, and I'm not trying to denigrate the commenter of this, but Richard, who said that not painting minis, he compared not painting minis to, quote, it's like buying a train set and only laying out the track on the living room carpet. I think that's just a great comparison. And if you haven't listened to episode 113, please do. I think you'll enjoy it and get you thinking about it. And if you have feedback about it, send it on in. Love to get your feedback. It would just be fantastic. So I have a few quick announcements before we close out this episode. The big news, which I can share with you, even though it's not yet public, but it will be shortly by the time you're listening to this, because this episode comes out on a very special Monday, okay, that pauses to build a little suspense. I am delighted to announce that I have brought back my other podcast, Geeks Explicitly! If you never heard of Geeks Explicitly, if you never listened to it, or you're a new listener, you have no idea what it is, here's my brief spiel about it. And I try to keep the two shows relatively separate because not everyone who likes Wargaming Recon will like Geeks Explicitly and vice versa. As the name suggests, Geeks Explicitly is an explicit podcast. It's not family friendly. It's not work safe. It's not something you should be listening to with your children. Wargaming Recon, I try to keep like PG, PG-13. So that way you could share it with the younger wargamer in your life. Geeks Explicitly is definitely for grown-ups, okay? There's swearing, adult situations, and things of that sort. It's not a show just to do those things, but if they come up, they come up and it happens. So Geeks Explicitly is a weekly podcast I do. It's kind of like a geek pop culture, geek life sort of thing where I talk about all that kind of stuff. I might have guests on. It's been famous, so to speak, for its top five lists. Many episodes of the show were a top five format. For example, might be like top five reasons why Star Wars is the best movie ever made, or, you know, something like that. So the show's back. I took a year off, which I didn't intend to do. Just kind of, it happens as time goes by. And then I brought it back. I explained why on that episode of Geeks Explicitly. If you are interested in listening to the show, and I would encourage you to give it a try, please head on over to trollitc.com/geekspodcast. Like I said, new episodes every Thursday. It's generally a shorter show than Wargaming Recon, about 20 minutes, half an hour tops, 15, 20 minutes usually on average. The episode coming out, my debut back episode, is longer. It's like a full-length Wargaming Recon episode, but that's just because I had a lot to say. The episode deals with the death of Optimus Prime in the 1986 animated classic, Transformers the Movie. I know, I probably lost a lot of you already. So enough about that, but I wanted to just announce that that show's back. Encourage you to check it out. I'll have links in the show notes, don't worry. Now, two bits of information that you will definitely care about. So previously I mentioned that I had two guests confirmed coming up for future episodes of the show, and I am delighted to tell you that I have more information. First of all, Henry Hyde, editor of Miniature Wargames magazine, now with Battle Games, and also author of the Wargaming Compendium, will appear on the August 4, 2014 episode of Wargaming Recon. So be sure to tune in on August 4th, 2014 and download it then. He'll be talking about all sorts of stuff, and Henry's great because, first of all, he's very friendly, he's very gregarious, open and welcoming, he's very, very smart, very approachable, knows a lot about all sorts of stuff, but also because whenever I have a guest on, I really like the guest to do a lot of the talking. You can hear me any other day, right? But the guests, they're special, they're on for that episode. So Henry, I can just kind of wind him up, and I don't mean it in the British sense. I realized the other day I was speaking with someone who lives in the UK, and I was like, oh, I just wind him up. And they thought that meant like I was insulting him. No. That's insulting too. I can give him a subject and be like, Henry, what do you think about whatever? And then Henry is so knowledgeable, so smart, so friendly, so used to public speaking that he can then talk for 2 hours about whatever I said at the beginning, which is fantastic because not only do I get to interact with them, but I get to appreciate it like you do as a listener. So I love that. So Henry will be on August 4, 2014, and that is going to be episode 119. And then even before that, on June 23rd, episode 116, I'm delighted to say that Stephen McLaughlin, who is the head honcho of WWPD.net, and formerly of Battlefront Miniatures, will be the guest for the episode. WWPD talks a lot about Flames of War, and they've also been getting into Saga by Gripping Beast, so they cover that as well, and they have all sorts of other things that happen. So he's going to come on and talk about all sorts of cool stuff, so that'll be on June 23rd. Okay, folks. Well, like I said, those are the upcoming announcements. Please remember the show notes for this episode, wargamingforums.com/WR115 has links to everything. It'll have links to our episode guide so you can find out what's coming up. It'll have links to how you can buy 1775, the board game on Amazon, to the Geeks Explicitly podcast, and it'll also have links to how you can get in touch for feedback. We're on Facebook, wargamingforums.com/Facebook. We're on Twitter, wargamingforums.com/tweet. Or you can email cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com. You don't need to remember any of that. Just remember the show note URL, wargamingforums.com/WR115. That has everything you need. So we will be back next time on June 23rd, 2014 with the next episode. And I'm going to be talking about whatever Steven decides he wants to is really what it's going to be. So that's June 23rd. Until then, you guys know the drill. I hope that you've enjoyed this episode. If you're a longtime listener, thank you for continuing to come back and download and subscribe on iTunes and get via RSS or Stitcher or whatever, however you find us. Thank you. And if you're a new listener, thank you for sticking with us this entire show. Hope you come back for more gaming goodness, more Wargaming goodness here at Wargaming Recon. So that's about all I got. And as always, you know it. No matter what's going on in your life, no matter how busy you are, no matter how many times you get called in to work overtime and you didn't really want to, no matter how little sleep you got, just no matter what, you gotta keep on gaming.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World, on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127-games.com.
Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Casts, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share-Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming.
Doom 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 doom. And I vow right now it's the last time I give in. So to commemorate, I'll go out and tie one on. I guess I'll quit drinking when you're gone. If I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, I finally gave up smoking too. At least I thought that's what I told myself I'd do. Then in a cloud of smoke, my car moved to LA. And my girlfriend got towed away. Well, if I put off till tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, come on, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Well, Well, I'm tired of being a whipping boy. And I'm tired of being fortune's favorite toy. So when the sun comes up, well, I'll grab it with both hands. Lord knows I need a change of plans. And if I put off tomorrow what I wanted yesterday, I'll just sit here till the future come and slap me in the face. If I don't change my direction and I float out here in space, then you can't say that I've ever lost my way. Then you can't say that I've ever lost my way.